Hi, this is Jill Schlesinger, CBS News business analyst, certified financial planner, and the host of the Jill on Money podcast. Beginning, middle, or end of the year, it's always a great time to take control of your financial life. And the Jill on Money podcast is here to help. Your questions make it possible for me to provide unconventional and entertaining insights on your money and, more importantly, on your life. Follow and listen to Jill on Money wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, though, without further ado, it's time to hit you with the Fan Focus. All right, leading us off, it's going to be Nick and Spencer as they discuss the latest around the Browns.
I think a fair amount of it is, even if people don't want to admit it, the thought of just moving on from Deshaun, I think for a lot of people has them watching on Sunday that might have not watched otherwise. But you guys can pitch in at Nick Wilson says, at Spencito _ on X, social media reactions on X, powered by Scheiben Jewelers, Cleveland's premier jewelry store. But the thing that you said, that sorry, because I really want to get to this.
No, you're good, you're good.
Because you said, well, we know where this goes from here. I think it's important to know, it's so early in the season. There is a wide variance on where it goes from here. And I think that is why Sunday, we can scoff at things like the playoffs. We can scoff at things like, you know, is there any hope left? Can you, you know, fix the offense in real time? All this kind of stuff. But, like, Sunday can be the beginning because it's post-Deshaun, because there's a clear demarcation here. Sunday can become the beginning of going to be a 7-win team, which would mean you go, what, 6-4 from here? Or you going 1-9 and maybe having the number one pick. And again, there's a lot of reasons you can spin either which way. It's best for Kevin Stefanski if they're 7-10 and not if they're, you know, 2-15. It's probably better for the Browns if they're 2-15 than if they're... But I think that's what's so interesting is I'm not fatalistic in how this is going to look. They still have enough veterans in that room at any point to spark even a small run that does complicate things. But you know, just to speak to that idea of, well, we know where this is going from here. Yeah. No, I really don't.
It is a mixed bag, and I don't know that this week is going to be the week that tells us anything. If they lose this game to the Ravens, I mean, that's the expectation. The Ravens have won 5 straight. Ravens are, in my opinion, the best team in football. They have the best quarterback in the game going right now. I would take Lamar over any other quarterback in the sport right now if you made me win one game. Now tell me to win a playoff game, and that's a different story. But right now, Lamar is the best quarterback in the sport, and he's threatening to win his 3rd MVP in 6 years. On an individual basis, he is much better than Patrick Mahomes is at the current moment, the way these two teams are structured. And then Derrick Henry is the best running back in the sport right now, and that is not really even close. Incredible what has gone on there. They're a great team. And I hate saying it, they're a great team, but I just don't know what they'll be in the postseason. But the expectation for the Browns this week is not that you win this game. The expectation for the Browns this week is that if you win this game, you then maybe reevaluate some things, because then maybe Jameis is looking at a Joe Flacco-esque run, and I don't know how you tell that man not to cook, but I don't think this is the week that decides it all. If you win a second game and go then to 2-6, the idea that you would have a first number one overall pick, a number one overall pick, I don't know why I said a first number one overall pick, a number one overall pick, a little redundant, Jonathan, goes out the window. Because the Patriots are not going to win another game this year. I'm convinced of it. I don't think they're going to win another game this year. And so I think that bar is already set at 1. All right, next up, Ken and Anthony on the Menendez brothers. Here we go.
Don't call it a comeback from the Menendez brothers.
Isn't it amazing the power of Netflix?
Wow!
Like, it really is.
Yeah, we got Stephen
amazing.
Avery out for a minute. I think he went back in.
Oh, yeah. Maybe
he's back.
Never
maybe
got
he should
Brendan
have never
Defrey
been out. Did not make it to SummerSlam.
He still threw a cat in a fire, guys. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, good God. I'll just say, people are marching in the road for the guy. I'm like, you threw a cat in the fire.
I know.
Come on.
I know.
Go ahead. Menendez brothers.
First of all, I told you, and I think it might be end up going down as one of my worst takes ever. When I told you
that the Menendez brothers were guilty, or
that it was a comedy.
Oh.
Because by episode 4, where it's just 30 minutes of deposition of what the parents did, or what the father, more specifically, did to the one son, the younger son.
I didn't know that.
It wasn't a comedy anymore.
I could not finish the series because
that was
of
tough.
That stuff.
There was a.
Yeah,
there was
that
a,
was tough.
So that this is like the Netflix is like a show. Like there's acting and things involved.
Yes,
there?
It is very much. And that Millie Vanilli has taken over. TikTok and things like
that.
Oh, really?
With the memes and, you know, guys that are approximately the age of the Menendez brothers when it happened, dressing like them and wearing the same 80s, late 80s.
Oh, yeah. Designer stuff. Yes. It was all designer.
And doing the turns and...
These guys blew through so much money.
Lyle in the series is such a maniacal person.
He's the older one?
Yes.
Yeah.
That people are emulating it.
Yeah. After what... Like, I didn't
and
know...
And it's getting blown past what happens in, like, episode 3 and 4 when they're doing the depositions. And that's where, yeah. Even my kids have mentioned, I know that they're, like, they've seen that part of the meme. And so to them, this is just a fun little trendy thing.
I watched the show on Netflix. We also watched one of the documentaries that was on Netflix as well. We got really into the Menendez brothers' story. That deposition was, my goodness. I mean, I don't know how you watch that. That was brutal in many respects. I think it's fascinating what Netflix can do, though. I think that's the main takeaway. It's not whether I think they should be out or not out or anything like that. I just think it's the power that a Netflix documentary then 30 years later can go ahead and get these guys potentially out of prison is wild. It also kind of makes you wonder how many more stories are like this that aren't getting in the Netflix treatment, where maybe in hindsight we look around and say to ourselves, yeah, maybe they shouldn't have gotten that much of a sentence. Maybe that shouldn't have been as severe as maybe it was. Maybe there were some problematic situations attached to that, but nobody else goes back and they just go back and look at it that way. It is wild. I think the acting in it was pretty decent. I think the storyline and how they told it was pretty decent as well. Little too heavy, though. Every now and then we'll watch things that are pretty heavy. And if it takes over my weekend, then I get here on Monday and I'm just in a blah. I'm in a blah state. Like, we watched the one thing on Bundy, and I was like, oh my gosh. Like, we did too much of it. You don't want to binge those type of things. Take those things, like, one day at a time. So I'm happy the Aaron Hernandez story, the one we're watching on FX, it's like once a week. I get, like, 1 hour on Aaron Hernandez once a week. The acting is abysmal, but it's a good story. I get it once a week. I can't do anything more than that. All right, next up. Baskin and Phelps on the potential Jameis Winston trade on how he does this weekend. Here we go.
I think if the Browns win and the offense sings for the next 2 weeks, I do think it is a little bit difficult for them to trade him. But I also think that if your contract has 1 year on it, you're fair game for the front office to start trading people. And even if they're able to get past 20 or maybe even 30 points offensively, man, wouldn't that be great? Oh, I'd love to see that.
It would be awesome to see a functional NFL offense.
I find it hard to think the Browns would lose a game if they score 30 points. Like, I think the defense, even though the Ravens' offense is good, I still think if they scored 30, who am I talking about? They haven't even gotten to 20. Just throw water on me.
Let's step one, get to 20.
You know, in hearing this, it never became more obvious to me what's going to happen now on Sunday. I don't know win or lose, okay? I have no idea that from that perspective, although the Browns' defense really should be able to do all right considering they've kind of owned Derrick Henry in his career. They've done very well against Derrick Henry. And even against, you know, Lamar's had games where he's completely disappeared against the Browns. That's either here nor there. The big thing is that this will be the game that they score 20 points offensively. I'm all but assured of it. I still think the offensive line is in problems and struggles, and I still worry about whether or not we don't have enough talent on the wide receiver front, and I don't know what Nick Chubb is as a running back. I look at Derrick Henry and Nick Chubb as the two best running backs in football over the previous half decade. Derrick Henry is still going. He's still going strong. Nick Chubb has now gone through his second major surgery in his NFL career. It's not going nearly as well for him. And the 2 yards a pop last week wasn't good enough. I know he found the end zone, but if he averages 2 yards a pop for the rest of the season, then we basically have no run game. It was a weird part of last week is that he got in the end zone and everyone celebrated. And because we all love Nick Chubb so much, no one wanted to highlight the fact that he really was very absent throughout the majority of the game. That's why they only gave him one carry in the second half. We just didn't want to talk about it because it didn't make anyone feel good. It wasn't a good part of the story. But ultimately, he's got to be better. No other way around it. I have confidence Jameis will put some points on the board. He's going to throw some picks, but he'll put points.
Hi, I'm PJ Vogt, and I want to tell you about my podcast, Search Engine. We try to make sense of the world, one question at a time. No question too big, no question too small. We will even answer your questions if you send them in. Stuff like, what happens when a cemetery goes out of business? What should we do about teens using AI to do their homework? Who buys luggage at the airport luggage store? Follow and listen to Search Engine in partnership with Odyssey wherever you get your podcasts.
It's on the board. All right, next up, it's going to be Spencer and Nick on dressing up for Halloween. Here we go.
She hates Halloween as like an adult, where she's like, I don't like adults dressing up and all that. She doesn't like doing all that.
I don't get that from the female perspective, because women are cute.
Yeah, I mean,
like,
generally,
you look
that's,
cute.
Yeah, that's fair.
Like, if you look like me, there's one way to go. It's Paul Bunyan.
It's funny you bring this up, because I was thinking about this a couple weeks ago. Like, I wish I had a friend who, like, regularly had a Halloween party so that I could just, like, I don't do the whole, like, furry thing where I'm dressing up just randomly and going, you don't know what the, Mac's looking at me
did
like I'm
crazy.
Did
you just say the furry thing?
Yeah.
Where did we go from Halloween
to
furries?
Because furries are people who dress up in costume, like, year-round. That's what I'm saying.
Okay.
I'm saying that's not what I'm asking for.
Okay.
I'm saying I
thank God.
The idea of going to, like, a Halloween party is something that I would want to do and, like, dress up for that. Like, I think that's fun. And I wish I had a friend who had a Halloween party that I could do that with every single year. But we don't really have that friend in our friend group, unfortunately. But, like, Brittany is glad we don't have that friend because she doesn't want to have to dress up in any capacity.
I will say it feels like we kind of just stumbled across that you might secretly be into the furry thing.
No.
And that was, like, you kind of throwing it out there, testing the waters.
Yeah, every year I take off that random week when Pittsburgh's hosting the furry convention. And
yeah.
I'm just not around. You know?
I think it makes a lot of sense. We're going to have to start tracking your PTO.
Guys that love Halloween and dressing up for Halloween into their 30s, you like dressing up more than just the one time all year. That's all right. It's fine. You like more. Yeah, I'm not saying furries. I'm just saying in general. You like dressing up more than the one time a year. I don't know when you do it. I don't know. Maybe you dress up as Santa Claus and Christmas. I don't know. You tell me whenever you do it, but you do it. I don't like dressing up for Halloween. In college, it was great. Growing up as a kid, it was great. At some point, it's exhausting and you don't want to do it anymore. And that's where I'm at in life. And I will never dress up for another Halloween costume for as long as I live. Unless you go, I mean, again, you're 20s or so and you got couples costumes and stuff and you got to just stay active because let's be honest, nobody wants a boring boyfriend. So you got to do those type of things. Great. Have a blast. And by the way, any single guys out there in your 20s or even in your, like college days, for instance, It was shooting fish in a barrel. There were 3 days a year where it was shooting fish in a barrel when it came to that stuff, okay? Halloween was one, New Year's Eve was another, and Valentine's Day was another. Shooting fish in a barrel. Halloween was the easiest night of the entire year. No questions asked when it came to that stuff. So you dressed up and you did the thing and it was what it was. As a married 30-year-old or anyone above 30 married, come on, Spencer, you don't need to be doing that stuff. You don't need to be doing it. And I don't know, maybe this will change. I'm open to the idea that, like, 15 years from now, as I then get into my 40s, and I'm 35 now, so I guess it'd be closer to late 50s or late 40s, excuse me. I'm open to the idea that, like, it's just a nice way to spice up life, that you dress up for Halloween again, and you do the couples costume things, and you pretend like you're in your 20s. But I'm in that comfortable stage right now where just not happening. I'll dress up my daughter in her 75 million costumes she has, and that's the fun that I need. And watching her go through the costume changes and all that stuff, like, that's the fun. That's the enjoyment. Nothing to do with myself. Nothing to do with myself in the tiniest bit. All right, closing us out here, it's going to be Ken and Anthony as they discuss whether or not Ken Dorsey will call plays from the booth or not from the booth. Here we go.
Booth or no booth?
Next on The Fan.
And there's many people going, who cares? Nah. 216-474-0092, booth or no booth?
Yeah, we need to hear from you.
Booth or no booth?
It's got to be one or the other, too. It can't be like, from the club section.
Ken Dorsey, either in the booth or on the sidelines. It's that simple. Go around the room quick.
Yeah.
Oh, and booth or no booth?
Oh, of course, booth.
Yeah.
It's got to be the booth.
I flip-flopped. I want him on the field, and I want him tethered, literally tethered to the head coach. Like, Stefanski, he gets the use of his left leg. Ken Dorsey, his right leg, and they have to move up and down the sidelines like that.
Do you want him tethered over the stadium like Vulture in Full House? What was our Uncle Joey Spano? What was there? What was the
Jesse?
Yeah, yeah.
He was Jesse Cochran in the
Uncle
first
Jesse. Yeah, Uncle Jesse, and he came in because he was the lead singer of Vulture, and then he came in on the thing.
All right, I'll answer that question. And there was a bit of audio today from Kevin Stefanski that tells me exactly what I need to know and whose decision it was to hand off the play calling duties. 216-474-0092. What are your expectations from Ken Dorsey with the play calling this weekend? We'll get to Off the Beaten Path at 940. We'll get to the Cavs when the Cavs game ends. It's overtime with Jonathan Peterlin here with you on The Fan.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And we have the podcast Office Ladies. Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories and lots of laughs.
Follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.